Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Woohoo! Are you ready?
Yes!
I said, are you ready?
Jason Dale!
Daddy's too hot.
I like peni.
That's what she said.
Hump. I love BJ's Pab Thwabby.
Blood Puddle.
Fur Circus. Steven Ricker's Testicles.
T-Butted.
Boom chicka wow wow.
No touchy place.
Beer.
Broken penis.
Vitellary Filipula.
Filipuli.
Filipalapala.
Wow, 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 wow.
Use your big boy words.
La 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 la.
Who's the brains in this outfit? My point exactly.
That was totally wicked!
Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And here we go. It's a new year. It's a new Evansville Iceman team, but it's the same old amusement park. Second hour Iceman Insights, starring the one, the only, Ivy calls him her Shockey, Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. How are you doing? Happy New Year, Michael Shockley. Oh, yeah. Isn't it beautiful outside?
That's one word for it.
Yes. Awesome is another. Fantastic is a third. This is Derek Benigni kind of weather.
Yeah.
This is where Derek wants to get the dirty D out and going.
You like your weather cold like your wife.
Yeah. Nice.
My apologies, Rebecca. Yeah.
My wife isn't cold. She has a flannel nightgown. Thank you, mother-in-law. Say goodbye to any other grandchildren.
So, we ready to get this thing started?
Yes. Right. Obviously, we've got a breaking news, our first topic.
Our top story is a big, important coaching change, and that would be your beloved Toronto Maple Leafs fired Randy Carlyle on Tuesday. They went 10-1-1 after that 9-2 thumping at home to the Nashville Predators on November 18th, but after that 10-1-1 stretch, they lost 7 of 9. And despite the slump, they are still, or were still in a playoff spot when the firing was announced. But the general manager said Carlyle had lost the room. Already talk of potential long-term replacements being possibly Dan Bylsma, former Penguins coach, recently fired Ottawa Senators coach Paul McLean, and if he doesn't stay in Detroit, Mike Babcock. So, what are your thoughts on Carlyle's firing first, and secondly, who would you like to see replace him?
I think I was never a huge Randy Carlyle fan. I didn't like him. I didn't not like him, but he didn't inspire me either.
Didn't move the needle?
No. So what I found really odd was just the timing of it. And granted, there was a 7 of 9, but I believe in that they picked up some overtime loss points. So I didn't think they were playing that bad of hockey. And then the last two losses, they've lost two of their top three centers. Peter Holland goes down with injury. Nazem Kadri goes down and with injury. Jeffrey Leupold fell over and is injured once again. And so and that all happened in the same game. We've seen that in Evansville last year. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of surprised for GM Nonis to come out and say that Carlyle lost the room. He lost this room 2 years ago. So I'm glad the GM, he's obviously got
his finger on a pulse
somewhere other than the pulse for him to finally figure out that Randy had lost the room. All you got to do is watch that 24/7 before the Outdoor Classic last year to see the shape of the room. But it is what it is. I don't get it. I am not surprised. And who would I like to see? I'm not sure. I heard Dan Bylsma actually on the World Juniors broadcast. He was doing a little bit of color commentating, and I don't know if he's a – I always liked Bylsma, but after hearing him doing color commentating, I don't know. He might be a good coach, but
you're a little soured?
Yeah, it was just kind of weird. Paul McLean's a decent coach, but anything that comes from Ottawa just is skank as far as I'm concerned. And the Mike Babcock thing, he is obviously, he's been my favorite coach for many, many years going back to Anaheim. I think he's a great motivator. But these rumors have been, it's the whole, we had a pretty funny Facebook discussion, myself and Ross Herman, the German former equipment manager of the Evansville Iceman last year, about they've had rumors about Steven Stamkos coming to Toronto, and he still has
home.
Yeah, he has 3 years left on his contract. So these Mike Babcock rumors have been floating around for over a year. Would I love to see him? Obviously. Do I believe it's going to happen? There's no way. There's absolutely no way that Detroit's not going to re-sign him for whatever he wants to run that club.
So. Well, and I guess the next question is, if he were to not re-up with Detroit, would he even want to coach Toronto?
Well, who wouldn't? I mean, this is where I don't want to frighten all you sinners and non-believers out there, but there's a good possibility that Jesus coming back, he's coming back to coach the Toronto Maple Leafs. Because who wouldn't? I mean, that's heaven on earth right there. How could you not want that job?
I'm glad my feet are not touching the floor because it's getting really deep in here.
That's the truth. Honestly, though, who I'd really love to see take it over is Peter Horacek, the assistant coach, because he played with former Evansville Iceman coach Jeff Pyle.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
So there's a good chance that I could get maybe a free ticket, or, you know, I could be in a assistant to the regional manager kind of position, you know, if I pull the right strings. So
there you go.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Time, and
fired,
we'll see how it all plays
fired
out.
Fired for having a quote-unquote rebuilding team in a playoff spot.
Well, that might be the possibility, was that they were in a playoff spot. So, and after watching Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel over the past couple of weeks for the World Juniors,
this is the plan to
notice. Tank. Probably was like, crap, we're playing too well. Let's fire. We got to shake this club up.
Yeah.
So, and which I'm completely fine with. So,
anyways, anywho,
yep.
There's another coaching change.
There
I guess
was.
We need to discuss.
Yep. It was sitting on a couch in Georgia in my underwear drinking all my brother's beers.
There's a mental picture.
My phone started going crazy. All my beloved Iceman maniacs texting me.
Yep. Coaching change part deux. So on.
I think
on,
it's pronounced Duix.
Yes. Deux.
Deux.
Yes. On December 17th, when we did our last show, the Icemen were slumping, but still just 3 points out of the North Division's fourth and final playoff spot. There were 10 games scheduled between then and now, so 20 points were up for grabs. And we talked about it on the last show. We thought in order to stay in the playoff hunt, the team would need to get at least 10 points out of those possible 20.
Well, we
weren't
even saying stay in the playoff hunt. Just what we'll be happy with, because I wasn't panicking or anything else. So, but
we wanted to see 10. And we didn't get it.
No. Not even close.
No. They went 1-8-1, earning only 3 of the possible 20 points, and yet still just 6 points out of the playoffs.
I want to give a big special shout out to Brandon Wong and his hat trick on Friday, December 26th, the only win during that span of games. Mm-hmm. My parents were in town. We bought the game on ECHL TV and watched it and had just a good old time rooting on the Icemen.
That
so,
was a heck of a game, too.
Thank
that
you.
That was a superior entertainment product. That was a really, really fun game. Some fights and a good crowd.
Yes.
and a lot of goals and a free car wash and all kinds of good stuff. That's one of those games where you watch that game and you go, why can't they do this every night?
Yep. Bottle it.
Yep.
So thank you very much to Wong 2 with love.
Nice.
Julie Newmar.
So anyway, yeah, they went 1-8-1 in those 10 games. And after a 1-9-2 December, which I went back and checked the records, that is the first full month in franchise history with only one win.
Woo.
And this team has done a lot of losing over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was surprised to verify that. I thought I would look back and I'd find 2 or 3 months that had only one win. But that's the first time we've ever done that. After the putrid December, Dwight Mullins was fired on New Year's Day. The Icemen were 9-16-4 at the time of his firing, and another surprising fact, 9 wins is the fewest through 29 games in franchise history. So
This is going back to the AHA?
Yes.
Holy moly.
Even compared to the AHA days and even compared to that first really bad season in the CHL and the first really bad season in the ECHL, this start is historically bad by any way you measure it. So, with Mullins firing, we are now on our sixth coach in seven seasons. Well, in our seventh season. We'll get to who is replacing him in a second. On Eyewitness News, Ron Geary said that the coaching carousel is the, quote, pursuit of excellence, end quote. So my question for you, absent of who is replacing him, was it too soon to pull the plug on Dwight Mullins, or should he have been given more time, or was it justified given the team's historic struggles?
Well, I don't know about justified. Ron Geary can do whatever he wants to do, and obviously he and his brain trust over there they know everything that's going on in the locker room and everything else.
They know stuff none of us know.
My only problem with it is going back to Rich Crom. We did not want to see Rich Crom get fired. We thought give him one more year. I believe we agreed on that. Mm-hmm. Because it was a transition from the CHL to the ECHL, and we just thought that he learned a good lesson about what players he could bring. Last year, Jeff Pyle, he won season, second best season in team history, and he gets fired. There was just some issues behind the scene that were just, it wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
So I understood that too. But what I am learning now is turnover is expected at this level, but you have got to minimize it where you can. Mm-hmm. And the problem I have with the change is now we're going to change everything all over again. And even just small things. And I know I'm a Matt Krug homer, because he's my roommate / lover. But, you know, there's a guy that, how many people are not coming to games this year because Matt Krug isn't, you know, the only thing they knew about the Iceman was they go out there, they wear blue and white, and Matt Krug's on the team. How many people are here are not coming 250, 500 on average per night because Nathan Moon is not in this lineup. And those are situations that, and I'm not just saying those guys, but you've got to find a way to have a core. You've got to find a way to have the fan favorites and that continuation through the seasons, even though you have change. And now you have change again at the top level, and it's just going to reshuffle the deck, and I just don't know, nothing against the players, but how can you perform in this league under these circumstances when you're changing everything every year?
Yeah, it's tough.
And at what point are we going to back a coach? At what point are we going to let him last
build
2 years
right
in the ECHL? And I go back to, you know, those great interviews I had last year, not I'm great, but the guys that I interviewed, DJ Abasala from Wheeling Nailers, and Andy Zilch, formerly of the Greenville Road Warriors, now with Springfield, and both of them said on the same day in same interviews, separate interviews, but I aired them the same day, that it's that coaches need 2 to 3 years to build their program and put their core players together. And so we're now 2 to 3 more years removed from doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I think given the struggles of the team, you can certainly justify making the change. But it's tough. The revolving door, at some point you have to stop it, and maybe now it will. Maybe this is the one, the hire that stops that from spinning. I hope it does, because there comes a point where, people will become fatigued by just too much change. And, but at the same time, I totally understand why Ron Geary is doing what he's doing. He wants pursuit of excellence. It may sound like an empty catchphrase, but that's what he's trying to do. He wants to win, and he wants to win now. And while you could certainly look at Mullins and say he deserved more time, as it was the same story with Crom, we thought he would have done better if given more time. But at the same time, when Jeff Pyle came in, we said, okay, let's give this guy a shot. You know, this could work. And it worked to an extent on the ice, but things off the ice screwed that up. So, we'll see.
and it pains me to bring this up because the Fort Wayne Comets suck, but you got to go back to last year. Gary Graham takes over that club, and you want to talk about losing a locker room. He had lost his best players, Mickey Lang, Mike Vascovo. They didn't want to be there anywhere.
Their proverbial dumpster fire.
The proverbial dumpster fire. And what did Fort Wayne do? They kept their coach, and they moved their best players. Mickey Lang got shipped down to Orlando. Vascovo got shipped out to Elmira along with Tuzzolini, the captain and big defenseman, who promptly got called up to the AHL. And that team made the playoffs.
Right.
And at what point are you going to sacrifice your personnel to have a coach that you believe in? And I'm not saying this, again, Ron's justified to do what he does. And maybe it wasn't Dwight Mullins to hitch your wagon to, in horse racing terms. Do they use wagons in horse racing?
I don't think. Well, but probably in some kind of horse racing.
They use them in Kentucky, but at some point, it's got to get. You know, we've got to last more than a year with a coach.
Yeah, yeah. So
at some point, we got to last more than 2 years with the same coach.
Right. And hopefully, maybe we finally have the guy to do that.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No.
The new coach is Al Sims, a 61-year-old Toronto native, played over 400 NHL games, including a couple years as Bobby Orr's defense partner in Boston. He won 5 championships in 10 seasons over 2 separate stints with the Comets, including a four championships in a 5-year span in between his 2 stints in Fort Wayne. He spent 3 years as an assistant coach with the Anaheim Ducks, then 1 year as a head coach in the NHL with the San Jose Sharks. After that, he bounced around the IHL, ECHL, and CHL for 8 seasons before going back to Fort Wayne. He retired after coaching the Comets through the 2012-13 season, which was their first and our first in the ECHL. Said he wanted to tend to his mother back in Ontario. She had health issues that have since passed. He does like the core of players here, but wants to simplify things, especially on the power play and on defense. And he thinks they just need a culture change. The players need to believe that they can win rather than that something's going to go wrong and they're going to lose. A couple things of note. His son, Jordan Sims, played 4 years at the University of Connecticut, had 101 points in 146 games, and turned pro this year. He currently is nearby here in Peoria in the SPHL. He's got 12 points in 19 games so far as a rookie, and Sims said on Iceman Live this week that he may give him a look at some point. So be interesting to see if he ends up getting called up. Also on Iceman Live, I asked, it was the first time we went this season, and I asked if just between you, me, the gatepost, and everyone in the building, how much do the Comets pay their players under the table? And he gave the politician's answer of, well, I'm not the one who was signing the paycheck, so I can't answer that. Very nice.
There you go.
So
amazing pedigree. Amazing pedigree.
So you don't think he...
Well, my concern, not that I have a concern, but obviously this is a guy that could get a job anywhere. I mean, he could potentially be an assistant coach in the AHL again with what he's done. And he's 61 years old. He's obviously been everywhere. I don't think he was on I don't think the coach search committee overlooked him.
No.
When they went to Dwight Mullins.
They said that he said on Iceman Live that he had been in talks with the team over the summer, and they were discussing whether or not he would be interested, and he was interested, but he decided to stay in Ontario because his mother's health was still a question mark. And apparently things have gotten better since then, and when they contacted him recently about coming in mid-season, he decided, okay, mom's okay, so I can do this.
So, but I'll be more excited if he signs a 2-year contract.
Yeah, and we don't know the term.
Yes, and so until that happens, I mean, this just kind of sounds like he's coming in just to keep the thing under, you know, get us through the season and then go and see from there. So, would absolutely love for him to stick around for 3 to 5 years with this pedigree. So not that, I mean, play with Bobby Orr.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what
he
we're
also
talking
with
about.
Gordie Howe.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you know, the great, titles with Fort Wayne Comets and everything else. So obviously this guy knows how to coach. So would love to see him stick around, but I just have at 61 years old. I mean, I'm happy mom's healthy again, but mom's got to be 85 years old. So, you know, yeah. It's not like, you know.
How long's that ship going to sail?
I got a grandma that's 89 up in Michigan, and we go and visit her all the time because you're 89. So, you know, would love to see a news article somewhere that comes out that he's got a 2-year deal and he's going to start building this thing. But until I see that, I'm kind of assuming that that he's just taking one for the team here and just helping us out, and then we'll go from there.
So riddle me this, Batman. If Al Simms was not available, if his mother's health was still failing, or if he just wasn't interested in the job, would Dwight Mullen still be the coach of the Icemen today?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of creepy that they were talking to him in the summer because they hired Mullins in June, late May.
I don't know when it was. Well, I don't know. I don't think he specified that it was summer. I think it was before Mullins was hired. He was one of the people they were talking to. I don't think it was that they hired Mullins and then were talking to him. I don't think that was what he meant to imply. I think it was just that he was one of the people who was considered when the position was open, and he decided he didn't want to take it because
he took
of his
name. All right, that sounds better. So, no, I mean, it's pretty obvious that talking about, again, losing the room, Mullins had lost that room.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was
something would have happened.
Yeah. And they would have found someone else to coach.
Yep. I agree. So, moving on.
Moving on. Are we really going to do all this?
We're going to rattle through this real quick.
Iceman and former Iceman transactions. And I'm going to be upset if you don't have a Quad City transaction on here, because that's the only thing that matters.
It's in here. Yep. Well, it's not in the transactions, but it's a little later. On the 17th, Zach Sternberg traded to Brampton for future considerations, and they have since released him already. So that didn't last long. On the 18th, Miles Bell returned to the Iceman by Albany, and he has since been recalled again on December 30th. On the 19th, Jarrett Lucan blocked a shot during a penalty kill against Reading. He left that game and missed the next five with a foot injury. He did return on New Year's Eve. On the 20th, Kevin Harvey did not play in the second game against Reading because in the first game on the 19th, he was assessed a boarding major, and he was then suspended one additional game, so he didn't play on the 20th.
Were you surprised by that? The additional game? Is that because of repeat offender kind of thing?
I think part of it was because he's Kevin Harvey. It didn't look that bad, and the player didn't miss. He only missed like a few shifts, and then he came back in that game. So I was a little surprised. But because it was Kevin Harvey, I think that played a role.
That one seemed not as bad as the Guy Lapine.
Agreed.
Shoulder to the upper head
area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So that kind of surprised me that he got, not that he got the boarding major, but that he got the additional from the league.
Yeah, so. I agree. I was a little surprised too. On the 26th, Mario Larocque signed by the Stockton Thunder, and he scored 2 goals in his first game with them. He's still with them now.
Yep, I like that move for Rich Crom.
Yeah, the transaction I know you were alluding to is an e-bug issue, and we'll get to that in a minute. But another e-bug story, on the 28th, former AHA Iceman goaltender Dave DeSander appeared in an AHL game with the Iowa Wild. He had signed as an e-bug for their game at Grand Rapids, which is where he lives. The starter in the game for Iowa gave up 8 goals on 27 shots through 2 periods, so...
Wow.
The e-bug actually played the third period when the starter was still healthy.
How about that
for
the starter to get replaced by an e-bug?
Right. That's got to hurt your pride just a tad. So DeSander played the third period, stopped 6 of 7 shots, so he had a better save percentage in the game than the starter did. He actually had not played pro since 2011, which was his third and final season in the AHA. And he did play 13 games for us during our inaugural 2008-2009 season. He, like I said, lives in Grand Rapids. He's been playing in a Sunday rec league up there. And oddly enough, the story about this said that he had practiced with the Grand Rapids Griffins the day before because they were down a goalie during practice. So he practiced with one team one day, and then the next day played in the game for the visiting team against the team he had practiced for. That's quite a whirlwind couple days for a guy that normally plays in a men's league.
And there's probably a bean counter somewhere in that Iowa organization that saw that e-bug going in and just probably had a nightmare thinking about the potential of liability.
Yeah. Yeah, what if he gets hurt? In other goaltending news, on the 29th, Garrett Bartus was released by the Fort Wayne Comets. He then signed with Greenville on the 2nd, and then Greenville released him on the 5th, so he's bouncing around a lot.
Still hoping for Lord Bartus. All he needs is two good opportunities, have a couple of good games, and
get on a roll.
Yeah, and just stick as I still think he is. I mean, I'd like to have him here. I really would as the number two. With what we've seen with Dreiser getting called up and back and everything else, boy, I think he, again, there's that stability of a face that people recognize and everything else, and this is Iceman hockey, and I wish he was here.
New Year's Eve, Jakub Sulek finally returned after missing 21 games due to back issues.
Talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and he was excited to get back on the ice, so really good guy.
The next day on New Year's Day, Scott Grenham, it looks like Greenham, but it's pronounced Grenham, sent down by the
Let's
Binghamton.
Let's call him Green Eggs and Ham.
There you go. There's a reference to that here in a second.
Oh.
He was sent down by Binghamton and immediately placed on reserve because he did not arrive in town until this past Monday the 5th. When he got into town, he was activated from reserve and Brandon Kamm was released to make room for him. He was sent down because Binghamton had signed 7-year veteran Peter Menino. And they also have NHL contracted Andrew Hammond in net. So Greenham was the odd, or Greenham. Grenham, that's going to take some time to get used to, was the odd man out. This is his third pro season. He's been playing really well with Binghamton. He's 7-4-1 with a .238 goals against average and a .926 save percentage in 13 games. He did play under Coach Mullins in Elmira last year, played 27 games with them, and had 2 wins against the Icemen at the Ford Center. He is an Ottawa native, so as you said earlier, anything from Ottawa is skank.
Skank.
Yeah. So Scotty Skank Grenham was a Leafs fan and a fan of Felix the Cat Potvin back in the day.
That's right.
Played college at Alaska Fairbanks and was roommates with Aaron Jens for 3 years.
That's awesome.
And because of his last name, even though it's not pronounced Greenham, he does have Sam I Am and Green Eggs and Ham on the back of his helmet.
Naturally.
Yeah. I asked him at Iceman Live, would you rather score a goal or get into a fight? And he chose the former. He said, I'd just get my butt kicked in a fight.
There you go.
So, folks who want to see a goalie fight, don't get your hopes up with him in net. And then finally, one last note of a former Iceman. Our old pal Joe Grimaldi from the CHL Iceman has gone viral, and not for good reasons. He's been playing for Edinburgh in the EIHL over in the UK, and he went nuts on Saturday night. Hit a guy high illegally. The player's teammate Max Perrant challenged Grimaldi to a fight, and Grimaldi decided he didn't want to fight right away, so he speared Perrant and then took his helmet off and threw it at Perrant's face. And then while Perrant was stunned by having a helmet tossed at his face, Grimaldi sucker punched him and then finally sort of fought. All told, Grimaldi ended up getting a minor for the shot to the head, a major for spearing, a major for fighting, a 10-minute misconduct, a game misconduct, and a match penalty all at the same time.
That's 42 minutes in penalty.
Quite a rap sheet. And Edinburgh did release Grimaldi after the game, but the story with video of the incident has been making the rounds online, even on Puck Daddy. So not the way you want to be making the news, but if you have not seen the video, go to Puck Daddy and look for it. I think it was posted on Monday. It's something I've never seen a guy throw a helmet at someone at the start of a fight before. And then three
should have been on the pond with me and my brother.
Three final quick injury notes. Patrick Kennedy has missed the last 4 games due to a broken knuckle. He is day to day. Danny Hobbs has missed the last 4 games due to a knee injury. He is also day to day. And Andre Bouvet-Morissette is still out due to a conky. 12 games and counting now. He was targeting New Year's Eve for his return, but suffered a setback in practice when he was preparing to come back. So he is week to week.
if you want to keep track of, boy, we got a lot of guys on the injured reserve right
there's
now.
A lot going
on. So if you need to keep track of it any time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it's IcemanManiacs.com. You go to the Maniac message board and you find the latest post, and that is all of your Iceman transactions and roster news. News and notes.
Few quick things from the 10 games and one note about the future. The Icemen have played 10 home games since Thanksgiving with only one win, and one of the linesmen in that game was none other than
Matty Spaeth.
The man crush, Matty Spaeth. That means the Icemen are now 3-0 with him on the ice this season, and that was after going 5-1-2 with him on the ice last season. So 8-1-2, that's pretty good.
Maybe he needs to coach.
That's it. We need to put him
or
on
be the mascot.
Put him on the payroll. There you go. New Year's Eve attendance for the big New Year's Eve game was 8,054. It was a great crowd. Shame it was a terrible game, but the fireworks after the game were really cool. There's videos floating around Facebook and YouTube if you haven't seen them. It was really, really neat. I think the fireworks, you know, you're limited by what you can do indoors, but I think they were better than any fireworks the Otters have ever done outside. It was really, really nice. And Jim Riggs said on Iceman Live on Monday that he thinks they probably will become an annual thing for the New Year's Eve game. So that's pretty cool. The thing you were alluding to earlier, Quad City had an e-bug for the New Year's Eve game, and it was a gentleman by the name of Chris Crook. And who might that be, for those who do not know?
Chris Crook actually has a signed contract with the Red Dragons in the ETHL. He has two championships back in the old Spa-aha, one with the gold team and one with the gray wads. And he is originally from Dawson Springs, Kentucky, born on Christmas Day.
Really?
And he is married to Danielle Crooks, and they have one child together. Danielle Crooks, assistant manager of Swander Ice Arena.
The person who does all the work that Bill Nadeau takes credit for.
Exactly. So, but Crooksy, very excited to get an opportunity. He's actually practiced quite a few times with the Icemen because of Dreiger going up and back and everything else. And then Quad City gave him a call, and he got an opportunity and really enjoyed it. He said, that is a tight locker room. He said he showed up and was just waiting in the hallway to get on the ice, and every player on Quad City came up and introduced themselves to him.
That's cool.
And then during intermission, he says they carry like a garbage bag full of Skittles. So when they're in the locker room at intermission, they're just passing around this huge bag of Skittles, and everyone's eating Skittles in between. And he said the chemistry on that team was unbelievable, and he wasn't surprised that they're a winning team.
I was very impressed. During the first period at some point, I turned to Amanda and said, this team is not very fast, and they don't look super skilled, but they've just got it together. The passes are always on the tape. Everybody's always in the right position. They've got it figured out. For a team that may be a little short on talent by ECHL standards, they're making the most of what they have. And yeah, after seeing one period, it was like, we're not winning this game. That's a good team, a very good team. It was interesting. Were you at that game?
No, I was in Georgia.
It was interesting. In the third period, starting goaltender Evan Mosher actually took a puck to the yam bag.
Yep.
And it was so bad that he was down and they had to stop play. And for a second, people were starting to think, are we going to see Crooksy in net? Well, but you could tell, you can always tell that a player has taken a shot to the the no touchy place when the trainer comes out and says, what's wrong? And the player just points to that general direction, and then the trainer does absolutely nothing.
Yep. Just pats him on the back.
Yeah. All right. You just need a minute. Okay. Yeah.
Sympathy, Pat. Crooksy said he looked up at the coach when the goaler went down, and the coach looked back at him, and Crook said he was pretty nervous, and then he looked at the coach's eyes, and he looked even more scared.
Crooksy
was going to have to go in. So.
Yeah. At that point, it was only a 2-goal game, so you never know what would happen. Final news and note on the February 27th game at Cincinnati has been moved to January 23rd, which was the original date for the game at Cincinnati that was moved to December 29th. That game was moved to accommodate a Cher concert on January 23rd, which has since been canceled. And, the Cyclones apparently wanted to have a game on the 23rd instead of February 27th. So, ultimately the net is, January 23rd still has a game just like the original schedule, and essentially the February 27th game got moved to December 29th.
All works out.
Yep.
Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week.
Monster Jam taking over the Ford Center this weekend. This is a song I used to use as a fight song at Swander. It is best known to monster truck fans as the theme song for Gravedigger. It's George Thorogood, Bad to the Bone.
Nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad, bad, bad. I met you, I'll break a thousand more, baby, before I am through. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad, bad, bad. Rich woman beg, and I make a good woman steal. I make an old woman blush, and I make a young girl squeal. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad, bad, bad.
Youth Inc. has been an outreach to inner city and area youth for over 20 years. Home of a coffee house, a vintage store, radio station, and music venue, Youth Inc. has run solely on the donations of supporters. Donation is easy, online, and secure. Visit our website, wiredwiredwired.com. Click to donate and join our Youth Inc. family of supporters.
Now, Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And Daddy.
And we're back. In a brief kind of way. Shocker. Dirty D. Iceman Insights. Wired. 96.9 FM. Where are we going?
Around the ECHL.
Around the ECHL.
Couple things of note from around the league. The Toledo.
50%.
Yeah, the Toledo Walleye hosted their outdoor games over the holidays, the first and second outdoor games in ECHL history. On the 27th, they lost 2-1 to Kalamazoo in front of a team record crowd of 11,222. The second outdoor game on January 3rd was postponed a day until the 4th due to rain. And then they lost 3-2 in a shootout to the Fort Wayne Comets in front of 11,081. And, for those who have not seen it, the Walleye website has time-lapse videos of both the rink construction process and the December 27th game, including the post-game fireworks. And I don't know that I've ever actually watched fireworks in a time-lapse video before, but it's pretty cool.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. They do everything amazing in Toledo. Yep. I don't know what their hookup is, but it's a fantastic organization.
Yep. Second thing from around the league, the Cincinnati Cyclones did a throwback night on Saturday. They had $10 tickets with $1 hot dogs, pizza, soda, and beer. And it was also their teddy bear toss. They had a crowd of 12,825, second biggest crowd in team history. And the teddy bear toss actually came in two installments because the first time the Cyclones scored, the goal was waved off.
Yeah, so, we had that happen in Toledo last year.
So they had a bunch of bears get thrown onto the ice, and they had to pause and clean them all up. And then later on, they scored for real, and they did it all over again. So no estimate yet on how many they collected, but I watched the video of both parts of the toss, and I'd say it was probably pretty comparable to how many we had at ours this year. So probably 4,000 or 5,000. So pretty awesome.
Upcoming games.
All right, no home games this week. The Icemen will play 3 games in 3 days, all on the road, all against former CHL teams. Friday at Missouri, and then Saturday and Sunday at Wichita. This is the trip that was originally going to be Elmira, Reading, and Reading, but the schedule changed after the ECHL absorbed the CHL. Missouri has been right around 500 all season. A name we've known from the past, Sebastian Tennell, is their leading scorer, and their roster also includes Dallas Earhart and Mike Clemente in net.
That's worth watching right there.
And then Wichita, they started slow, but they are now 5 games over 500, and they are 7-1-1 in their last 9, so they're hot. They also have some familiar names. Tim Boron is their starting goalie. He spent 4 years with Rapid City. And their backup is one of the best names in hockey, yep. Tyler Bunz.
Buns.
B-U-N-Z. I love that name. Our next home game is the 17th, Saturday the 17th, against Cincinnati. That will be their first visit this season to Evansville. And it will be Star Wars night, and it's going to be a big crowd. There's less than 100 tickets left in the lower bowl, and the whole upper bowl is now on sale.
There you go. Final thoughts.
Next show, tentatively next week, permitting our schedules. So, the 14th next week, but
I'll be here.
You'll be here regardless.
Regardless.
So, show next week, and that's going to be all for our on-air segment.
Yep. We're going to move the rest to the podcast because we got a special interview with Al Sims that was done last weekend on Saturday. But for the podcast and all the other information, he is Michael Shockley, and you can check him out, all of his work, at IcemanManiacs.com. You are listening to Iceman Insights on 96.9 FM, Wired.
We'll see you on the radio.
Dirty D, Shocker, an IcemanManiacs.com podcast exclusive.
Iceman Insights is going into overtime.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
And it ain't over now. Because when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Who's with me? Let's go! This is fire!
And now, overtime.
Unplanned overtime.
Podcast edition, Dirty D, Shocker, Studios of Wired Radio. Only for you who have gone the extra mile, given 147%.
Showing heart.
Gone to IcemanManiacs.com, found the podcast, clicked on it. Congratulations. This is also a warning that rated R for my language. So if you are listening with your children, it is time to, we don't have a 5-second thing. So there will be potty words forthcoming.
So this is what happens when I script the show for the regular amount of time.
The regular amount of time is 40 minutes. You did the typical
hour,
growing more and more and more as the season has gone along.
And then I get in here and you say there's going to be a special interview.
Yep.
So we had to trim some things. So we just decided, rather than trim them all together or push them to next week, we'll just put them on this here overtime segment.
There
That's
you go.
That's the beauty of podcastery.
Yes, and taping.
Yes.
Because we're live.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Mad speculation by the mad scientist, Dr. Dirty D.
You intro your own segment now?
Yes, I do.
Jeez, you're just running this thing, aren't you?
Well, you've got the update from the last 7 that we did, so that's going to take you a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we'll skip that this time.
Oh.
We'll skip the update from the last 7.
Oh, okay. Well,
if people have found this, then they know what the last 7 are.
That's true.
They know the truth about gelatinous tubercles and antiseptic bloodbath.
They do
spectrophobic
work.
Dementia and all those
leprosy.
Fun things. Right, exactly. Yeah, last time Randy Cure missed time because of ruminating virulence.
That is true.
Which you said, ironically, given his name, there is no cure.
Exactly.
That's very sad. Thankfully, he's back.
Naturally.
So, anyway, on the 27th at Fort Wayne, Matt Lowry blocked a shot and remained on the ice for quite some time. He missed the rest of that game, but did return in the next game on the 29th at Cincinnati. The fan, quote-unquote, reports were somewhat inconsistent, shall we say. Some people said it was a groin. Some people said it was a hip pointer. So, once and for all, what exactly, Mr. Dr. Dirty D, happened to Matt Lowry?
It was both.
Oh.
It was a broken penis. It was a broken penis, broken so bad it was pointing out his hip. That's what happens when you get shot in the balls with a vulcanized rubber from a pro athlete. Bad things happen.
Ouch.
Yes.
Right in the yam bag. Like
yes.
Said. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed.
I tell you, there's nothing worse than that, is there?
No. And kind of going on to the earlier segment, you know, you get shot there and you can't move. There's nothing you can do, but you just lie there. Any other injury? I mean, we've seen it in the NHL recently. There's been a couple of scary incidences with skates. The one defenseman down in Tampa Bay got the skate blade right across the chin, and we saw Claude Giroux get the skate across the Achilles. And there's pain like that, and you get up, you're looking to the bench, whatever else. Mm-hmm. You get shot in the penis, you is down. It doesn't matter
no getting
if you
up
are
figuratively or literally.
Fourth grade elementary school play yard or you're a professional athlete. When you get shot in the nads and you go down,
it's awful.
That's it.
I tell you, I was the worst pain I've ever felt. I was in high school, and there was a guy that was – we're on the podcast, so I can say
yes,
this. There was a guy that was kind of a dick, and he was always a dick to me. So one day he comes up to me in the hallway. I was waiting to get into a classroom for my next class. The room was locked. The teacher was not there yet. So I'm waiting to get in there. I'm just leaning up against the wall, minding my own business. He walks by, not even going to this class, walks by going to a different class, and tries to basically not punch, but, you know, kind of jab me in the gut just walking by because he's a dick and that's what dickheads do. So he tries to do this, and I'm standing there holding a textbook, and in the process of trying to block him,
I deflected it down
and not his fist. I accidentally, in the process, jabbed myself in the nuts right with the corner of a very heavy textbook. With force. And I lost it, man. I was on both knees in the hallway in front of God and everybody. It was the worst pain I've ever felt, and I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, including the dick who made it happen. It's just really, really, really rough.
I had the neighbor kids came over for Christmas, and Ivy got a Nerf gun, and he got one of the neighbor boys got a double-barreled shotgun, sawed-off handle Nerf shotgun.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, you've got to shoot that. So I stood up and got about 5 feet away, and he cocks it. He's aiming it right at me, and I'm like, whoa, 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 don't shoot me in the face. He's like, oh, okay, whammo, and I'm like, don't shoot me there either, and I crumpled to the floor. This is the Nerf bullets from 5 feet away and
point blank.
No touchy place.
Yeah.
So, yep, yeah. There you go. There's your mad scientist report.
Broken penis.
Broken, done broke off penis.
But that's a whole, if it's broken all the way off,
it's broken off.
That's even worse.
That is bad.
So
there you go. Who's your hockey championship belt? About the worst segment ever.
The Comets retained in back-to-back title defenses at home on the 20th of December, a 3-1 win over Indy.
Be a contender. You did the stats in the first segment. We're 9-16.
I'm telling you, it was laid out at the beginning of the season. It does not matter what the records are. It only matters who has the belt and who they're facing. It doesn't matter.
I think we need to tighten this up for next year.
So on the 20th, the Comets beat Indy 3-1, and then on the 21st, they retained again against the Icemen in a shootout, a 4-3 victory. But the Icemen won the title at home on the 26th, beating the Comets 6-4. That was, as mentioned earlier in the on-air portion, our only victory in the entire month of December. It ended the Comets' title reign at 70 days. And then they ended our title reign at one day when they won the title back the next night in Fort Wayne on the 27th in a decisive 5-1 victory over the Icemen. And then they defended it against Indy again on New Year's Eve. They won 6-3. So that is 6 successful title defenses against the Fuel in 6 chances. You gotta think sooner or later the Fuel may win one, but so far the Comets are just running away with this and making a mockery of me. Not that that's very difficult to do. Up next, the Comets will defend against the Icemen in Fort Wayne on Friday the 16th. So,
I think we need a tag team belt. I think we should join Indy and then bring the steel chair and drop it on Fort Wayne in Kalamazoo or something like that.
We can have an old school steel cage match
there
at Swander.
At Swander. Like it.
So,
I like it. Have all Brian Vall build all the extra seating again. That'd be great.
Nice.
Ugly sweaters.
Yeah. Back on the 20th, the Icemen wore the ugly Christmas sweater jerseys, and then they were auctioned after the game with proceeds to St. Jude, which is a great cause, and the numbers were way up from the Education Day jersey auction. A total of $15,000 exactly raised, average of $577. The top jersey was Chris Driedger, $1,300. Guy Lepine, or as Al Sims calls him, Guillaume Lepine.
Who doesn't?
Not kidding. Oh, well, you don't. You call him the Flying Sasquatch.
Once. Only once.
$900 for Lepine, $800 for Danny Hobbs, $750 for Donnie Harris and Peter Sakaris. Those rhyme. Other big money numbers, Patrick Kennedy went for $650, Matt Lowry and Brandon Wong, $625, Randy Keir and Jarrett Lucan, $600. Kiel Kerbashian, Daniel Johnston, Jim McKenzie, and Andre Bouvet-Morissette, all $550. Relative bargains among the bunch, Troy Rutkowski, Miles Bell, Kevin Harvey, and Brandon Kahm went for $500.
Well, that's a bit higher than normally you get a couple of 200s or 250s there.
Right. A team-signed 2XL jersey went for $400, and a team-signed 3XL jersey went for $325. So the numbers were way up. Almost all of them, I think, were higher than the highest ones at the Education Day jersey. So a very different story. I really thought the Christmas sweaters looked pretty cool. They were supposed to be ugly, but I didn't think they were that ugly. As ugly Christmas sweaters go, they weren't that bad.
I hate the
You
whole
don't
thing.
Care. Yeah.
I I'll be a. You just tell me when the Red Wings wear ugly sweaters in a game, and
you just got to be a party pooper.
That's just like I said earlier. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not right. You're not right.
It's just a matter of opinion.
It's just a matter of opinion.
I'll say this: you don't see that at the NHL level because it's more of a big business. But man, there's a lot of gimmicky stuff that happens in the minor leagues.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
It's a totally different ball game.
But you. I don't know. In the first segment, you talked about Ron Gary saying pursuit of excellence. And then you have ugly sweaters.
It's all marketing, man.
I flunked marketing Central Michigan. So there is synergy in that. And there is conflict in that. And you got to be a really good organization to kind of make that all work out together. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with that.
So, but something that I wanted to talk to you earlier, but we had to do 47 minutes of transactions of ex-Icemen. And you didn't even mention Nathan Moon, but I won't hold that against you. But we talked about coach getting fired, Dwight Mullins, and I understood it. Don't like it just because at some point we need stability. But one thing I really am against is the whole Guy Lepine doesn't need to be captain anymore. This whole thing, that makes no sense to me. And we're seeing what's happening to Guy Lepine is what happened to Matt Krug last year. Is we talked about it on this show preseason that we had concerns about this defense. Mm-hmm. We had concerns about this defense core. And I don't understand why your obvious best defenseman on the roster is taking all the blame because of something we have known was bad when we looked at the roster in late September, early October.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that someone asked Al Sims, and he talked about how he was really excited with Guy Lepine and how he's been playing and everything else, and that's just the truth of it. And Matt Krug, all pro numbers when he was playing with Thomas Larkin, Joe Lavin, and Guy Lepine.
Right.
And when those three guys all left, a lot of people wanted to run him out of town, and all of a sudden his penalties weren't good enough and everything else. And so you got to take a look at all six of the players that are playing that position and not just throw it on. Just the whole stuff about leadership issues and everything else. I mean, Guy is Guy Lepine. There's no leadership issues there. So I'm definitely not a fan of.
I would just say if you want to question Guy Lepine's leadership capabilities, question them to his face.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the cojones to do that, then shut your trap.
There you go. Hockey 101, helping Iceman fans new and old alike understand the game of hockey a little bit better, and we've just helped them understand what it means to be a captain.
Yeah.
So,
This is not a question submitted by anyone. This was actually inspired by something that happened in Saturday's game against Kalamazoo. I think most fans do know that
this is why we go over all the time. You didn't even get a question in, and you just figured, well, we've only got 7 pages. I might as well come up with my own question
exactly.
For this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sheesh.
So most fans know you cannot play with a broken stick. You have to drop it right away.
Yeah, Matt Lowry knows that now.
And I think most fans know that you can't throw a stick. But there is some question about what happens if you're holding 2 sticks at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, Chris Driedger lost his stick. It got down into the corner. And after the play exited the zone, Randy Cure went over to the corner, used his free hand to pick up Driedger's stick, and skated back over to the crease with both sticks in his hands and gave Driedger his stick back. Now, what Cure did was legal by rule.
Yes.
There's a bit of a misnomer that you cannot, under any circumstance, have 2 sticks in your hands at the same time.
Missed this question on my USA Hockey Level 3 exam.
Did you really?
This spring, or this fall. Yes, yeah. I did.
Admittedly, I thought it was that too. Because when we were younger, that was the rule was that. You could not have 2 sticks, period. But at some point along the way, apparently, the rule changed. Because I looked up this rule for this segment, and I learned this myself.
Yep.
That it is in the rule book that what Cure did is legal by rule. in the rule book, and it's NHL, ECHL, everything is the same, and apparently USA Hockey uses slightly different wording, but it is essentially the same thing. Rule 10.5 in the ECHL rule book states that you can hold two sticks at the same time as long as you do not, quote, participate in the play.
Yes, and that is a key issue right there.
Right. So essentially, it's okay to hold two sticks if you don't touch the puck or an opponent. If you're behind the play and you're not, you're not doing something intentionally to affect the play, then it's okay.
Because I would say it's probably going to get called a penalty if it's a 3-on-2 rush and you've got two sticks in your hand and you're backing up with the D on the blue line to make it a defensively to try and stop it and make it a 3-on-3 rush.
Well, yeah, with two sticks.
So even though you haven't touched any players and you haven't touched the puck, you're still participating in the play.
Correct.
So,
but if you're behind the play and no one's around and you just go pick up a stick, you can do that.
Yep.
Which I did not know until I looked it up for this, because I thought the same thing you thought, that you
the old rule was looked up later.
So yeah, but the thing that I don't understand is why it is where it is in the rule book. It may be different in the USA Hockey rule book, but in the ECHL rule book, there's one paragraph about this whole two-stick rule, and it's crammed right in the middle of the rule. 10.5 is about stick measurement, when you have an illegal stick, and how you're measuring it and the whole process and when it's a penalty and how the you know, just the logistics of it. There's six paragraphs about stick measurement, and then there's this random paragraph about carrying two sticks, and then there's two more paragraphs about stick measurement. I have no idea why this pretty important rule is covered in the middle of the stick measurement rule, but it is where it is. But it took me forever to find it.
We'll talk to the man crush.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, that was a hockey 101 that I learned something by preparing for the show.
The Brian Patafi tweet of the week.
B. Patafi, B-P-A-T-A-F-I-E. He said, quote, "Someone compared me to Brad Pitt today. They said I have the same initials."
Yeah, that guy's brilliant.
Yeah.
Writes his own stuff.
Mm-hmm. Usually chiseled in stone tablets.
The Dangling Tangent.
So, for those who are listening, you probably already saw my status on Facebook a couple weeks ago that I'm currently without a job. The long-term future of this program and our short-term schedule of this program is sort of in limbo because of my job situation. So, I figured because of, me needing a job, if anyone's got anything out there for me, just jobs
that
in general.
Desperate.
Yeah, it is.
Way to use those airwaves.
I got a mortgage and yeah. So anyway, due to my job situation, what is the worst job you have ever had?
Worst job I have ever had. Lasted one, maybe 2 days. I was like 16 years old. One of my first jobs, dishwasher in an Oriental restaurant.
Really?
Did not like it at all.
Yeah. I could imagine.
Nope. Couldn't do it.
Mine's actually very similar to that. My first job, I can't say that I've ever had a really terrible job, but my first job was probably the worst. I started working at Dairy Queen when I was 14. Probably broke some laws, but I was only 14 when I started working there, and I was doing dishes too. I was cooking, but I was also doing dishes toward the end of the night. And my manager there was so cheap that he just wanted to get out of there as fast as possible. Like, the store closed at 10, and he wanted everyone out of there by 10:15. Dishes done and everything clean and everything. Well, you can imagine how well things really get clean in 15 minutes when you have a whole store to clean, and by the end of the night, there would only be two people left. So there'd be one person cleaning the grill and things like that, and I would get stuck on dishes. And it was, I don't care how clean it is, finish it so we can get out of here. And it made me a little leery of eating there when I knew that was the mentality. But this is the same guy that the owner of the franchise that I worked at, and I'm not going to give the address because I don't want anyone to shut them down, but
up in Indianapolis.
Yeah. The owner was so cheap that he would scale everything down. Like, he would order the medium cones and sell them as larges.
Wow.
And he was, the smalls would be mediums, and the kids' cones would be sold as smalls. every little penny-pinching move that he could possibly do to screw over the consumer and save a dime. It was not good.
No. That place sounds horrible.
Yeah. It's not good. We had, it was not in a good neighborhood, and we had, I mean, there was a liquor store across the street.
Nice.
One time a guy came stumbling out of the liquor store and walked over.
Gotta get some fries.
He didn't even make it into the building. He gets to the, gets to the front of the building, sits down his brown bag, drops trowel, and proceeds to pee on the front of our building.
Wow.
Right there.
I love it.
Yeah. So we called the cops, and the cops came out and took him away for public intox. And before the cops got there, and the guy was so plastered, he didn't realize what was going on anyway. Before the cops could even get there to take him away, our manager, the aforementioned cheapskate, went out and stole the guy's alcohol, took his brown bag away and took it inside and ended up drinking it himself.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. We had
a belligerent customer one time who was yelling, like Jerry Springer style yelling over the counter because, you know, she ordered something and it was prepared how she wanted it, but she still didn't like it. So just because she didn't like the taste of it, it was our problem apparently. So she started getting belligerent and like grabbed one of the employees by the shirt, and our assistant manager, who was the wife of the cheap manager, took the closest thing she could find and grabbed a plastic tray from the top of the trash can and broke it over the lady's head.
Wow.
Yeah. It was.
So how long did you last there then?
I worked there summers for 3 straight summers.
Wow.
Yeah. It was interesting. The stories those walls could tell when you work at a Dairy Queen in the ghetto.
Not only is it just crazy, but probably the best job I've ever had was Holiday World, working up there a few summers ago, because mm-hmm. that place is it's clean and it's well run and it's good people with good people, and it's so much, and none of that would ever happen.
No.
Ever. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Amanda worked there for a summer or two.
Oh, that's
back
right.
In the day.
I forgot about
that. She liked it too. Other than having to stand all the time. She was a ride operator, so yeah, she didn't like having to stand all the time either.
That is the one drawback.
And the heat.
Yeah.
I couldn't handle that. That would be what would do me away there. But anyway.
There you go. So how do we wrap this up?
I don't know. It wasn't scripted, so if it's not scripted, you don't know how to wrap it up.
Wait, did we talk bad about Brad Perkins or Steven Rickard or something?
Ooh.
We didn't even say taters.
We haven't mentioned Steven Rickard's testicles in a while.
Yep.
And we're on the podcast, so
it won't
piss off Andy Fuller if we say taters and
broken
penis some more. And what else can we say?
It's just not even fun. It's
no,
like,
no.
It's like
we're not breaking the rules.
Apple. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else is there? Covered Guy Lapine, we covered Coach.
How about NHL, other than the Leafs? What you've been watching a lot of NHL lately?
Yeah, been watching a ton. My wife, she's a trooper. We go down to Georgia to visit the family, and my brother's two boys are 16 and 14, and I get down there, we play street hockey for 3 hours, we come in, we eat lunch. Oh, we didn't talk about the Winter Classic.
Yeah,
so
that's a good one.
But we come in, we watch the Winter Classic, we go back out, play 2 more hours of street hockey, come in, watch hockey until we fall asleep, get up the next morning, World Juniors are on, I try calling you for that WYSIWYG's backdoor thing.
Yeah,
so
which apparently is no more.
Oh,
yeah.
So you're
they quit at the end of 2014. They were hosted in...
It would have helped us.
They were hosted in Spain or something, and apparently there was a legal change there that shut them down, so... You have to go through other unlegal. That's a good word for you. You have to go through other unlegal means to find those.
So then, you know, we get up the next day. There's no hockey on yet. Oh, 2K15. So we play a couple of tournaments like that. So, I mean, it was just hockey. So
sounds like a dream.
Yep. I'm trying to think of anything that really, really impressed me. Rangers look like they've got it all sorted out, playing well.
Yeah.
I've been impressed with the Winnipeg Jets all season long.
You keep waiting for them to collapse.
Yep.
It's starting to happen with Calgary a little bit, but Winnipeg just keeps going.
And then the whole Edmonton thing is just hysterical. I've watched a lot of Edmonton just because I want to watch them lose and hear what the experts are going to say, because all the experts pick them to be a playoff team every year because they got a bunch of first-round picks. And
it's
just
not happening.
Yeah, it's just...
What do you think of the David Perron trade?
Amazing. amazing that St. Louis traded him for Magnus Pajarvi.
Yeah, and then who's promptly, a healthy scratch.
Well, I think they waived him.
Yeah,
they waived him down. And then Pittsburgh pays a first to get Perron. It's like, that's the best thing Edmonton's done. Now, yeah, of course, they'll get another first-round pick, so rush them, not develop them, rush them into the lineup and suck some more. Yeah. But that
so
was a beauty.
They essentially turned Magnus Pajarvi into a first.
Yep. They turned
and Rob Klinkhammer.
Yes.
Which is a good name. Yes. It's no Clutterbuck or Klitsam.
No.
But it,
or Party.
Klinkhammer is still pretty good.
Or Seaman.
Or Pwab Thobby.
Pwab Thobby. I can't believe you spent 5 minutes on a guy that played one game and was released.
Three but games. Anyway. He played three games. Let the record
us.
State. Yeah, played three games for us.
Oh.
It was
disagree.
Quite the era.
Quite the era.
So, Winter Classic.
Yes. Loved it. Thought it was great. Washington just looked really good, which kind of frustrated me because we got that whole Chad Burley, Barry Trotz versus Peter, who's coaching Nashville?
Laviolette.
Yeah, Peter Laviolette. So, but they looked really good and good game, and what a heck of a finish there, or mm-hmm. Chicago looks like they've got it all tied up and they're threatening and big save and right back the other way and shoots, he scores on a broken, I mean, Ovechkin gets his stick slashed right out of his hand and obviously a penalty call's coming up and then quick turnaround and fire. And
well, I love that he gets the stick slashed out of his hand and then he sort of curls off to complain to the ref about it. And in doing so, he screened the shot. So it worked out perfectly.
Exactly. So, but, and it's always great. I thought they did a great job. Not sure what the whole Billy Idol thing was about.
Yeah, the
but,
music was a little weird.
The only thing I can think about that was in Anaheim in that stadium series last year, it was all Kiss. And I think they just rocked the place. So I think the
they
NHL
feel like
thought,
they have to do something
yeah, we
like
got
to
do rock. We're hockey, and Kiss totally rocked.
Right,
SoCal. So we gotta have hard rock. So there's nothing harder rocker than
Billy Idol.
Billy Idol from '82.
Yeah, and then for intermissions, we got Gavin DeGraw, who hasn't had a hit since 2004.
Yeah, and he kind of seemed like he was struggling through that song, too.
But, hey, he's a hockey fan. And, you know, because we have an identity crisis, we have to plug every celebrity who happens to be a hockey
fan.
We
definitely have an identity crisis.
Yeah. And then there was Lee Greenwood did God Bless the USA.
That's
the one song that anyone knows that he ever did. I enjoyed it, though. I thought it was a really good game while the ratings were down and, going in, it maybe didn't have quite the same pop that previous Winter Classics have had. I thought it was a very good game. I thought the atmosphere was really neat. I liked what they did with the star and the Capitol building and the players skating up the blue pond. That was really neat. And I thought it was nice. While I enjoy the real wintry looks of the games, the snow globe effect when you get snow flying and stuff, I thought it was kind of neat to see a game played on a sunny day.
Yep. And what I really liked was they put that white tarp all the way around it, so kind of had that fake snow kind of look. It didn't look out of place. Like, if there was just grass down there, that probably would have
looked a little weird.
Yeah, been weird on the eyes. The only thing I didn't like, Jeremy Roenick in the stands. Was he pushing creepy McBaldy kind of Pierre Maguire category there?
Well, nobody. He got to like
when
a
he was
0.5
in there
on the
with
Pierre scale.
But when he was out there with the 12 kids and he's like trying to talk to them and
that
he
was,
had
yeah.
that was
so. Who's your favorite player?
Yeah, I've got a dog in my van. If you want to follow me after the game, that was just.
Yeah, you mentioned the white tarp. They did that in Toledo too for the outdoor games there. Of course, it was actually wintry looking there. Overcast and nasty, but the thing I liked the most about the time lapse video that they showed on their website is it was facing the camera was facing the right direction to where when the sun did come out you could watch it move across the sky and reflect off the glass and everything in different ways. It's just really really pretty.
Perfect. Yeah, that was a great way to wrap it up.
You mentioned
we're not wrapping up.
No,
now we can't wrap.
Now
up.
We can't. We're talking hockey. You mentioned Trotz and Laviolette. Yep. That's starting to look like a win-win. Like both teams, obviously Nashville's doing really well, but I think Washington's starting to figure it out.
Part of it, and again, I have nothing against Barry Trotz, but I think he's more of an average coach. And yeah, he's got Washington playing really well, but don't forget, Washington spent a ton of money on two really good defensemen in free agency. They got Brooks Oprick. They stole
Niskanen
from Pittsburgh, who was their best defenseman. And then they got who else did they get?
I think it was Oprick.
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah. And they stole Oprick as well. So
Oprick.
So, you know, before we start saying, oh, Trot systems work, that is a great pairing to move in.
Yeah.
Regardless of what coach was there.
True.
So
yeah. I'll say this though. Trotz, even if he's average, probably an upgrade over the last few coaches they've had.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Adam Oates may end up taking over that New Jersey Devils
job. Yeah. How do you think that's going to work out?
Oh, I think it's fine.
Co-coaching situation?
Well, it isn't that. It's really what kind of happens anyways. I mean, you got the head coach. It's not like Randy Carlyle wasn't drawing up every power play and everything else. So he has his influence on, hey, I want this changed up. But your offensive coach is, you know, they're doing more than just opening the doors.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's fine. And what I love about Lou Lamoriello is he's a guy that not only is he evaluating all the players, he's standing on that bench and all 18 of those guys realize, man, my career is on the line here. You know, I can get shipped off to Calgary or Edmonton in a heartbeat or Phoenix. But, he's also evaluating two potential coaches at the same time. Mm. He's watching Oates and he's watching Stevens. So he gets to evaluate everyone and the room all at the same time. And then when the season's over, he's obviously given up on this season.
Yeah.
And he'll go upstairs and he's going to fix this club and they'll be right back in it next year.
Do you think Yager gets dealt?
Just
had a hat trick at the age of 42.
Yep. The oldest guy ever. The guy is sweet. But, I think if they get there's no reason to keep them. If they get a decent offer, yeah, they'll move them. And I think anyone, they'll move off of that club except for maybe Schneider.
What would you offer? If you're a team that needs a top six forward, would you offer a third or a fourth?
No, it isn't even that. It just kind of depends on the situation. I think we've seen over and over again that most of those trade deadline deals don't work. I mean, the one that stick out is Los Angeles Kings getting the Columbus Blue Jackets player Marian Gaborik last year, and he was the best player in the playoffs. Mm. But more often than not, it's just so hard to gel, and chemistry-wise, at that late in the season, like if you want to add a third-line grinder or a fifth defenseman, those are the kind of moves that put you over the top. And, mm-hmm. and trading for the Jerome Iginlas and the Marian Hossas and everything else, the Thomas Vaneks, very seldom does it work. So I just don't even know. And Yager's been through it a couple of times. You know, Dallas made that trade for him at the trade deadline a few years ago, and it didn't work. So I don't know. There's got to be what kind of team is thinking that they are a top eight team, and what will put us over that will guarantee us a Stanley Cup berth is Jaromir Jagr. I don't see it.
The way things are going and the way they like to throw money around, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
That's a train wreck, man.
Yeah.
They talk about having a big payroll and nothing to show for it.
Yep.
The hell's going on up there?
I don't know. I that one's weird. I've been watching them lately. But they play a really boring style, and
for a team with a lot of offensive skill, it's bizarre.
Yeah, and so I don't know, and I don't know if it's just they went to the well too many times with the goaltenders, and Darcy Kemper seems to be relatively solid, but they're just not getting. You know, when you don't have confidence in that netminder, then the team doesn't play that well. So
yeah.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, that is a weird situation.
It's a shame what happened with Josh Harding. Because it seemed like before the MS really flared up, they had found their guy.
Yep.
He was going to be the guy. And I mean, they were talking Vezina for him last year. And then it just went to hell in a handbasket. So, yeah.
Well, and then they had Backstrom, too, who stepped in 2 years ago when Harding first was diagnosed with the MS, and he played lights out, and he can't stay healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, so, yeah, what can you do?
Yeah. Unfortunate.
It sure
but
is.
But I'm not a Wild fan, so I don't really care that much. It's just unfortunate.
It is. Well, yeah.
Kyle Furnetton's a Wild fan.
Yes, he is.
So then it's fortunate.
How did he end up with all those Minnesota love affairs? Because he's a Vikings fan, too.
I don't know. Beats the heck out of me.
Well,
I don't know if he's originally from... I think he's originally from Wisconsin or something.
Next time I throw him in the box for 2 minutes, I'll ask him.
What's your deal, man? Yeah, I don't know.
Cool.
Good question.
All right, we're at 35 minutes. It's time to shut this thing down.
What if I don't want to?
You're going to go steal another soda from the poor youth ministry?
Yeah.
You could. Yeah. You're unemployed.
Yeah, I need it, man.
Yep.
I got to get my fix. So, yeah. Speaking of the poor youth ministry, you want to plug that real quick for those listening?
No.
No?
I really don't.
No.
I'll do it all day tomorrow. I mean, I've already done it all
day.
Yeah,
because we're live.
So that's about it. Anything you're looking forward to hockey-wise this weekend? You going to buy any of the games on ECHL TV?
No.
No Dallas
like
Earhart?
Said,
no
I'm
Mike
poor
Clinton.
And unemployed. There's no buying games on ECHL TV. We may have a funeral to go to this weekend, so that's going to suck the fun out of it.
All right, let's just kill this right now since you're dragging it all down.
The funeral is for this show.
Hey, it's Michael Shockley, the senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. But you already know it because you're listening to the podcast.
That's where you got this.
I am the Dirty D. We'll be back next week.
Well,
have fun.
Derek will be back. I may. We'll see.
He'll
Who
be
knows?
Back. You
I
know
probably
it.
I won't have a job by then. I'm so screwed. Somebody give me a job.
We'll see you on the radio.
Yeah. Later.
Music bomb.
The puck is in, the home team wins the good old hockey game.